Sweden, it is 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast, and it is 8 p.m. in Jerusalem, Israel. Today is July 27, 2015, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio Studio One, we are going to talk about the events and the people that makes the events come to life. We're going to actually ask a very, very important question. What really people are all about when they're trying to run our life and when they're trying to make a difference? For example, what comes to their mind when they decide to run for president and then run their mouths? Then what about all this killing of innocents in Syria that nobody is complaining, nobody's saying anything? It's 2 years, but if there is any response for attack on by the Israeli Defense Force, they're going to be condemned by Security Council. I'm not saying that there is a world that, you know, it's going to be better elsewhere, but this one is ours, and we're going to fix it. And we're going to make people come to and realize that whatever they do must be true. We have a few situations. Let's talk about the first one that I wanted to mention to you. It's the one on attack on The Turkish government, God bless them, decided to help with ISIS, you know, and eliminate them. And on the way, they decided to attack the Kurds in the north. And, you know, there was somebody very smart that says about war in 1909, in order for war to be just, three things are necessary. First, the authority of sovereign. Secondly, cause, a just cause. And thirdly, a rightful intention. Now, anything in the world but rightful intention was with attacking the Kurds. The Kurds have nothing to do with hostility against the West. The Kurds, if they are, they're on the right side. And anytime anybody attacks them, I know that they are from the other side. And now the Turk decided to attack ISIS and them on the same token. I think that this is a confusion in the very, very best, you know, because if you think about something that go in both directions at the same time, that's what's happening in Turkey. And thank God that America is coming to help, because I think that they need some kind of adjustment. It's not easy to be confused in this time, and it's, of course, it's not easy to decide how we're going to go about in life and how we're going to go and, you know, vote for a new president, when the world seems to go in shambles. But it's not going in shambles. It's seeking freedom. It's actually unleashing itself from the shackle of the past. All this organized, you know, slavery that people organize, groups, country organized, you know, you do that, you be a part of this country. We're going to take charge of this. You're going to become a colonel. This, we are in charge of this other one. All of that actually had people in shackles. All the Middle East that is coming in uproar, it's not a confusion. It's a democracy in the making. And it's the first thing about democracy is having freedom. Without freedom, you cannot have democracy. So if George W. Bush started to promote democracy, our president, the president, the U.S. president, is doing the next sensible thing, is keeping it, you know, on track, making everybody free. And to say that, you know, something like Huckabee said, I don't know what come about this man, but a friend of the Jewish people to talk this way about the president of the USA, and you want to be a candidate, I don't know if to send them to confession or to send them to find his real new friend or to tell him that we are done with him. But Mr. Huckabee, I'm calling you to order. That was unacceptable, uncalled for, and outrageous. The statement that you said about the Iran deal sending the Israeli to what? To Holocaust again? My goodness, you live in a different world. Definitely know our world. Our world made of freedom. Our world made of power. Our world made of God. And God of Israel, God is in charge here. And you guys are so fake. So I think you better apologize to the president because he called it ridiculous. Ridiculous is not even a word to describe what I want to call it. It's completely insane. So I wanted to say that, and I feel very, very sad that the world is feeling so free to attack what we did so hard, what we worked so hard to keep, to maintain, you know, the integrity of the world and with the leadership of the Americans. You don't come and attack the people who actually keep you safe. It's really a contradiction in terms. Let's get some music and we'll be right back after that.
Something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover. Something in the way she moves me. I don't wanna leave her now.
What a classic, what a classic, the Beatles, Something in the Way She Moves. They're very, very good songs that we have for you, and there are so many things to talk about. But I think that we need to put a note to what happened when Secretary Kerry found out about the letter that was sent to Iran. Let's listen to this.
The C-SPAN networks bring you long-form public affairs programming from the nation's capital and are a public service of your television provider. C-SPAN, created by cable.
In the last few days, there has been significant division between our two parties on the message that we are sending to Iran. An exceptional, I would argue, unprecedented letter from 47 of our colleagues to the Ayatollah himself. That many of us believe will have the effect and has the intention of undermining the authority of a president. Secretary Kerry, you're here before us. This is a subject of great debate within the Senate today. What do you believe are the ramifications of this letter? What do you believe is your interpretation of the facts of that letter, which state essentially that any agreement signed by the United States expires the minute a new president is sworn into office? Share with us your thoughts on whether this is helpful or hurtful to our efforts to try to divorce Iran from any future nuclear ambition.
Well, Senator and members of the committee, my reaction to the letter was utter disbelief. During my 29 years here in the Senate, I never heard of, nor even heard of it being proposed, anything comparable to this. If I had, I can guarantee you, no matter what the issue and no matter who was president, I would have certainly rejected it. I think no one is questioning anybody's right to dissent. Any senator can go to the floor any day and raise any of the questions that were raised in that. But to write to the leaders in the middle of a negotiation, particularly the leaders that they have criticized other people for even engaging with or writing to write them and suggest that they're going to give a constitutional lesson, which, by the way, was absolutely incorrect, is quite stunning. This letter ignores more than two centuries of precedent in the conduct of American foreign policy. Formal treaties obviously require the advice and consent of the United States Senate. That's in the Constitution. But the vast majority of international arrangements and agreements do not. And around the world today, we have all kinds of executive agreements that we deal with. Protection of our troops, the recent agreement we just did with Afghanistan, any number of non-controversial and broadly supported foreign policy goals. The executive agreement is a necessary tool of American foreign policy. It's been used by presidents of both parties for centuries, literally. And it is recognized and accepted by Congress from the earliest period of American history. Now, with respect to the talks, we've been clear from the beginning. We're not negotiating a, quote, legally binding plan. We're negotiating a plan that will have in it a capacity for enforcement. We don't even have diplomatic relations with Iran right now. And the senator's letter erroneously asserts that this is a legally binding plan. It's not. That's number one. Number two, it's incorrect when it says that Congress could actually modify the terms of an agreement at any time. That's flat wrong. They don't have the right to modify an agreement reached executive to executive between leaders of a country. Now, sure, could a president, another president, come in with a different attitude? No president, I think, if this agreement meets its task and does what it's supposed to do, in conjunction with China, Russia, France, Germany, Great Britain, all of whom are going to either sign off or not sign off on an agreement. I'd like to see the next president, if all of those countries have said this is good and it's working, turn around and just nullify it on behalf of the United States. That's not going to happen. So I have to tell you that, knowing what we know about this, this risks undermining the confidence that foreign governments in thousands of important agreements commit to between the United States and other countries. And it purports to tell the world that if you want to have any confidence in your dealings with America, they have to negotiate with 535 members of Congress. And that is both untrue and profoundly a bad suggestion to make, I think. But aside from the legalities, this letter also raises questions of judgment and policy. We know that there are people in Iran who are opposed to any negotiated arrangement with the P5 plus one. And we know that a comprehensive solution is not going to happen if Iran's leaders are not willing to make hard choices about the size and scope and transparency of their nuclear program. And we know that a nuclear-armed Iran is unacceptable.
Mr. Secretary, I know this is a well-written speech, but
not a speech,
you've been at this for 5 minutes.
This is not a speech. Yeah. This is a statement about the impact of this irresponsible letter.
And you have a lot of
the letter does not have legal authority. Yeah. And I think you have to ask what people are trying to accomplish. The author of the letter says he doesn't want these agreements to be made, and he thinks before the judgment is even made that it's a mistake.
Yeah.
So we'll see where we wind up.
Good.
But I'm asked by one senator the impact, and I'm laying out to the committee what the impact is.
And 26 seconds later, you finished. I will say that I didn't sign the letter. I'm very disappointed, though, that you've gone back on your statement that any agreement must pass muster with Congress. The way we pass muster here is we vote. And I think all of us are very disappointed with the veto threat and the stiff arming that is taking place. But with that,
Senator
Gardner,
Mr. Chairman,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You have the right to vote any
Mr.
day.
Mr. Chairman,
you
thank
want.
You for the time.
You can,
Secretary Carter.
Hearing with Secretary Kerry that spent 2 years on an agreement with Iran in order for it to have a provision for action. That wasn't a treaty. It was a plan for action. That put Mr. Kerry in a very odd position, which I know he didn't like to take. I know that the world is asking what's going to happen, but the truth of the matter is we don't know. We need to give it a chance. And as you know, in peace and war, you really need to give a chance to the idea that they're going to stop manufacturing whatever they were planning to, and they're not going to be capable to create a nuclear bomb. And the United States with the G5+1 are going to be there to stop them. And, of course, you can say we don't believe, but you must consider that there is no real option on the table that you can do. The only option is, you know, the provision in case things don't happen. They're not going to be relief of the sanction. They're not going to get, you know, they can ask for something and get it. And if they don't buy, it's going to stop. So it's not, on the long run, they're going to come to terms with whatever they do. And I know that America and the representative did the very best. And we're listening. And the fact that the House of Representatives are mad at them makes it possible to understand. But you cannot stop this from being a part of the history. We need to just put it in the book and check and see that everything is happening and pray to God that we're going to be vigilant, courageous, and worthy to be saved and make sure that they're not going to have the bomb. Let's have more music, and we're going to go back and talk about the loss of the daughter of Whitney Houston. God bless her soul, which such a sad thing.
Roll camera.
Same bed, but it feels just a little bit bigger now. Our song on the radio, but it don't sound the same. When our friends talk about you, all it does is just tear me down.
It's July 27, and it's half of the hour almost. And we were talking about what the world is like, and in midst of all, we had the news that the daughter of Whitney Houston died after we lost our mother too. So it's really sad for Christina that she followed the footsteps of her mom and disappear from the world. Every time a child, a young person died, is such a waste, such a waste. And my condolences to the family. We loved Whitney Houston so much, and she's missing, you know, she's missed very deeply. And I'm sure that you all understand that when God gives us a treasure like a song singing person like she was, we need to preserve them really, really well. And with that note, we know that Mariah Carey, God bless her, she's coming to Israel to have a big concert. And it's going to be incredible because Mariah Carey has a fantastic voice. She's outstanding, spectacular a singer. And she's sweet and she's kind. And I'm sure that the Israeli will welcome her and the lover, because the Israeli public are really, really good for music. They love music and they understand music. And we have a gift. That we can say that music from all over comes across, and when we keep the good one forever, we never let them go. I know that Tony Bennett come to sing here, and even that he's old, but he's worthy. We have Paul Anka came, and actually Simon is spectacular. It's amazing, you know, people. In all ages, but they are true, you know, true gem. You can't get rid of them. It will be like a treasure you never get rid of. You are blessed to have it. That's all you're holding, and you're holding it dear. Now we have a lot of things that. Happening in the world, and one thing that I already predicted for you guys, and this is not prediction channel, and you know that my connection to God is really godly, and I love and I bless, but I do math, and mathematics for me is very important with everything. I love math, and I calculate very well the dimension of stuff that happens. That's why I love politics, because I can see them coming. And like you can predict it, you know, everything with the Clintons, when they're still repeating the same stack of cards, and they think that nobody know how they play, but same game over and over, you calling upon them when they show up. But we have a chance to understand that now China is in deep trouble. We had a collapse of 8% today, 8% on growth. China share fall more than 8% on growth concern. Share in mainland China have recorded the biggest one-day fall for more than 8 years following the sell-off toward the end of the trading day. Shanghai Composite closed down 8.5% at 3,725.56. After a weak economic data raised concern about the health of the world's second largest economy. Now, it's going to affect us all, of course, but it's gonna shake up the base. And that's where the economical world will come to play. Now, we have a few ideas that are already in the making, but people have to come and be brave. Now, let's talk about the war. Are we going to settle enough for a minute and decide that, you know, all those ISIS groups need to vanish, they need to go away, they can conclude this with effort of the coalition, the English, the Americans, of course, the Turks, everybody join forces and just get rid of those boogeymen, okay, because it's ridiculous. This Disneyland of the dark side must end. And the Kurds need to have their own space, guys. 30 million people, they've been crying again and again, and they deserve it. The Turks can come and shoot them whatever they want. They won't go away, okay? Iraq is on the verge of dismantle every institution there. I don't know what's the situation these days, but I know we have some people that can give us some info in case we need it, because there are a lot of friends working hard there. And I don't know, they're not even Americans, they are local. So I know that the good forces are joining forces to help. Okay, all the region. It's not Iraq, it's everywhere. I'm going to play it right. Now, the Chinese been really, really concerned about their well-being, that they forgot about the rest of the world. And I saw the map that they actually, I published it on my Facebook page on BBS Radio, on the Impossible Truth. And that shows where they, you know, they spread their wealth on the places which they cannot flourish in a long time. They're not productive in the short time, so they actually put them to waste, because if you don't collaborate, you don't send the good forces around to help, you're eventually going to lose it. And that's what they did. They took the money and they threw it away in some very risky places, and they knew it was risky. And now, instead of putting back in America's economy, like they suck it out, they didn't do the right thing, and now they're collapsing. So we need to decide about a joint venture for everybody. But that joint venture needs to formate in a different set of rules. They need to set, forget your five goody two-shoes routine in Europe. Forget the fact that Germany is running the show, because she's not in charge, and the collapse of the Europe again is not helping. I want this time to have to let us run the show as far as economic growth. The Jewish people have the right to ask for that one. If you want to pick up the pieces, if you want to go to a different way, you need to give us the keys this time. If you want. We can do it the hard way or the good way. Anyway, we need to get out of it. So if we make a coalition, I want to see some massive players from all kind of people. The one that makes the difference, the one that can, you know, crunch some numbers and crunch some ideas and sit in a room and create a future for the global economy, and it has to be global. Einstein did not invent global government for nothing. He knew it's going to come. And it's you can call it global government. You can call it global economy, which it is, global session, and United Nations. Guys, what are you all doing there? So since we don't have... they're changing the ambassadors, and the ambassador of Israel is going to change soon in the United Nations. So you just want to have somebody who can play the game and can do the math and make it right. But you have to play. You have to play along and come and make the difference. Because if you think about some place where Israel can be as a function, it's not about the Israeli, it's about the Jewish vote. And the Jewish vote is all over. Of course, they all are very connected to the land they're sitting in, so because that's why they're staying. They're not coming to Israel. But you can understand that this time the cards are changed. You know, world power, you're powerful as long as you have what it takes. But right now, Israel has what it takes, and it should be in charge of that. And I'm not requesting anything. If you guys want to have some help, if not, go ahead, by all means, collapse. But I don't care. You know, we have 7 million people. We have a land. Maybe we can grow our food. We can have the water that God gave us to lead. And what we need, we are T-shirt and jeans kind of people, basically. We're not people that that need all, you know, it's not Monte Carlo, and we're not the king of Saudi that needs a whole beach in France evacuated just to indulge his lifestyle. No, Israel is Israel. We've been around. We know how the good life, and I love that when they think about Israel, they think about money. When they don't realize that we are really, really, we like falafel, or we like, you know, pita, we hang up with the kibbutz. We like to sit on the grass in the kibbutz and eat watermelon and sing music together, or clap our hands and dance ora. You know, you guys have to understand who are the people of Israel here are, and not, you know, pass judgment all the time according to the misjudgment of the anti-Semites that have been building over the years for some reason. And I've been talking to some British guys about what is it to be exposed to anti-Semitism, and it's not funny, but I know that in every given time, it's not even, you know, everybody suffers some sort of something. It's not us. They kill everybody because of somebody. The bad kills everybody in time. So we need just to join forces where nobody's different from the other, and let's get the world back on track. But I think we have a plan. I do have a plan, and I ran for it for Senate. It wasn't ready then, so I never exposed it well. But I've been pondering it since 2004, and I think it's ready, you know, it's mature, let's see. But then we need to consider how it's going to take place. So I cannot tell. I will not tell. But I do have an idea. All right, guys, let's have some music so we can go back. And after that, we're going to talk. Oh, maybe we can have How Is It to Be Free of our beloved Jonathan Sacks.
Shadows fill an empty heart as love is fading. For all the things that we are not saying. Can we see beyond the scars and make it to the dawn? Change the colors of the sky.
All right, we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis, and that was Deleteria with What About Now? And What About Now? It's about time that we start talking about to the Arab people that go on Temple Mount and try to scare the Jews away with screaming of Allah Akbar. And, you know, usually Allah Akbar and the rest of the world come with a bomb. So every time they do that, it's really not funny. And I've been around when they came to do it. But for some reason, God blessed me with the presence that they stopped. But it wasn't funny. And I saw what happened yesterday, and I saw what happened you know, after that. They are intimidating, bullying holy places. And this is not holy. And God will not forgive them. Don't even think. It's ridiculous. They have to let go. And nobody could say it better than Rabbi Jonathan Sacks.
My lords, I too thank the noble Lord, Lord Risby, for initiating this important debate. And at the outset, I declare an interest. I am a Jew. Israel is therefore for me the place where my people were born almost 4,000 years ago, the place to which Abraham and Sarah traveled, where Amos voiced his vision of social justice and Isaiah dreamt of a world at peace, where David composed the Psalms and Solomon built the temple. And this had consequences, not only for Jews, but also for Christians and Muslims who claim Abraham as their ancestor in faith and whose God they take as their own. This had tragic repercussions throughout the Middle Ages because Christians and Muslims claimed, each in their own way, to have replaced Jews as the people of God and thus as heirs to the Holy Land. The otherwise saintly Augustine declared that Jews were cursed with the curse of Cain, destined to be restless wanderers on earth without a home. Islam held that any land that ever came under Muslim rule was henceforth and forever Dar al-Islam, that is, land that rightly belongs to the Ummah, the Muslim people, any other rule being illegitimate. On both of these theologies, Jews had no right to their ancestral home. A half century ago, these theologies would have been considered irrelevant. The West had moved on. After a century of religious wars following the Reformation, it recognized the need for the secularization of power. This allowed the United Nations, in the partition vote of 1947, to grant Jews the right to a nation state of their own after 2,000 years of exile and persecution. Eventually, there were peace agreements with Egypt and Jordan, and an intensive process with the Palestinians. When power is secularized, peace is possible. Today, though, throughout the Middle East, and parts of Asia and Africa, there is a seismic shift taking place in the opposite direction. People are de-secularizing. They feel betrayed by secular nationalist governments that failed to deliver prosperity and national pride. They consider the national boundaries imposed by colonial powers to be artificial and obsolete. They're uninspired by the secular culture of the West with its maximum of choice and minimum of meaning. And they have come to believe that salvation lies in a return to the Islam that bestrode the narrow world like a colossus for the better part of 1,000 years. And although their faith is hostile to modernity, they sometimes understand modernity better than its own creators in the West. They know that because of the internet, YouTube, and the social media, communication, indeed politics, has gone global. And they also know that the great monotheisms are the most powerful global communities in the world, far broader and deeper in their reach than any nation state. And the religious radicals are offering young people the chance to fight and die for their faith, winning glory on earth and immortality in heaven. They have started recruiting in the West, and they have only just begun. But when ancient theologies are used for modern political ends, they speak a very dangerous language indeed. So, for example, Hamas and Hezbollah, both self-defined as religious movements, refuse to recognize the legitimacy of the State of Israel within any boundaries whatsoever, and seek only its complete destruction. The Islamists also know that the only way they can win the sympathy of the West is by demonizing Israel. They know you cannot win support for ISIS, Boko Haram, or Islamic Jihad. But if you can blame Israel, you will gain the support of academics, unions, and parts of the media, and you will distract attention from the massacres in Syria and Iraq, the slow descent of other countries into chaos, and the ethnic cleansing of Christians throughout the region. They are thus repeating the very failure of the regimes they have risen against, who for 50 years suppressed dissent by demonizing Israel as the cause of everything wrong in the Arab or Islamic world. When you blame others for your failures, you not only harm the others, you harm yourself and your people. To be free, you have to let go of hate. And if you let hate speech infect the West, as has already happened, in some of our campuses, prisons, and schools, then our freedom too will be at risk. My lords, I and the vast majority of the Jewish community care deeply about the future of the Palestinians. We want Palestinian children, no less than Israeli children, to have a future of peace, prosperity, freedom, and hope, which is why we oppose those who teach Palestinian children to hate those with whom they will one day have to live, and who take money given for humanitarian aid and use it to buy weapons and dig tunnels to take the region back to a dark age of barbarism. More generally, we say, in the name of the God of Abraham, the Almighty, merciful, and compassionate God, that the religion in whose name atrocities are being carried out, innocent people butchered and beheaded, children treated as slaves, civilians turned into human shields, and young people into weapons of self-destruction, is not the Islam that once earned the admiration of the world, nor is its God the God of Abraham. It was Nietzsche, not the prophets, who worshipped the will to power. It was Machiavelli, not sacred scripture, who taught that it is better to be feared than to be loved. Every religion must wrestle with its dark angels, and so today must we, Jews, Christians, and Muslims alike, for we are all children of Abraham, and it will only be when we make space for one another as brothers and sisters that we will redeem the world from darkness and walk together in the light of God.
Amen. Amen to that. Amen to that, for real. Only if we make space one to another, that's where we start. Because whatever they worship, it's not the God of Abraham. People who worship that don't have nothing to do with Abraham. We have a few minutes to go, and as you know, we have to understand that the world is changing fast, and we are planning for the next season to be, you know, the season of fun. Summer brings all the children out. They need a vacation. Spend your time with them. Enjoy them. Give them what they need to be children. They need to have childhood. It's about time we stop worrying so much about work, because everybody knows that money comes and goes. But when they're grown and they forget who you are and they neglect you when you're old, you can't complain, because you did the same when they were young. So we don't know who needs more, you know, the children when they're young or the old when they're old. The truth of the matter is we are a circle, and the circle of life, as they called it in Disneyland, or in the Disney movies, is a constant, and we are all connected. And this interconnection of the world make us all beautiful and make us lead our life better. You look around and you see, you know, Turkey's planning to Syria buffer zone. What does it mean? You know, they have a buffer zone between Syria and Turkish. There is a huge wildfire in Spain, Catalonia region, which is not nice. It's not fun. And we have beach closure, you know, for the King of Saudi in France. We have struggling to surf the web in Cuba. Oh, that will be fun. They're going to start shopping for iPhones. Oh, God. America is going to have a blast teaching them how to become, or probably they, some of them know. Then you have migrants in the Athens fight for food. That's on BBC News. And on the side, share tumble in China, and the hot air balloon set records. That's the most exciting thing, if you ask me. If you ask me, that's the most exciting thing. And in the politics in Fox News is, you know, talking about Planned Parenthood. My goodness. There is so much stuff that one wants to say about it, but it's all ugly, ugly stuff that they have there. And for some reason, criminology makes most of the news. I don't know if they all inspired lawyers, inspire investigators, but all the news media become to be like a thriller-like. This is not news that I remember. I remember philosophical questions, philosophical answers, galaxy, you know. Even they talk about galaxy, they talk in galaxy graveyard. I can't even fathom where this comes from. Why is it talking this way? And at least President Bush is hanging up with Katy Perry. Please, somebody of common sense. Anyway, we have some more time to have some music to go, but I want to salute you, and I want to thank you, and I want you to fly safely, go and make the blessing. There is a blessing before you go on a plane. Or before you go from your house, and it's really easy. They call said, bless when you are out and bless when you are coming in. Make some few words of prayer before and when you come back, because nobody knows what tomorrow brings. So just make sure, you know, God will save you always. Just be together with your loved ones, love them, and really try your best to become a better one. So, because we need you to be better, so we can be better together, and we can make this world, you know, change the world and be under one God, because we all remember there is a God, and it's not us, so he's in charge. So time goes, and all the people come and go like nothing. And he stays forever. That's how it goes. So thank you so much for your listening. We'll be back on Wednesday with European news and Italian music. And all my love, it's really Benny Davis, the impossible truth, saluting you. God bless you. Be well.
Hiya.
And how old are you?
I'm 15.
And why are you here?
I'm here because I love to sing, and it's what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. Thank you.
We met a man quite like you.